Hello and welcome everybody to our inaugural episode of the Bash Bros podcast. My name is Corey Ballmeister, and today I'm joined by my older brother, Brad Nelson. How you doing, my bro?
I am doing great. I'm so excited to finally get this off the ground, and even more excited to introduce our special guest, my best friend, Brian Brown Doohan. B Dizzle, how's it going?
Oh, I'm glad that you asked, Bradley, because it is going swimmingly, and I could not be more excited to be the special guest on the very first episode of the Bash Bros podcast. I think you two have a great thing going here, and it is truly an honor to be here for the first one.
Now, are you swimmingly because we did get a chance to play with some merfolk from Ravnica Allegiance on Wednesday?
No. I'm swimmingly because my house is flooded.
Yeah, he's actually just in a pool.
I'm currently recording this podcast while bucketing water out. So
the audio is spectacular. I don't know how you're editing out all of that water, but keep doing what you're doing. You've got a great setup. And you also have a great streaming setup because I watched a little bit of the action unfold on Wednesday as Wizards had the Ravnica Allegiance Early Access event, which was something that they invited roughly around 400 streamers to. They made a special arena account for all of us. They had fully
sorry,
stocked.
I want to correct you here a second.
All
they
right.
They invited about 399 streamers and one swimmer.
And one swimmer.
You can continue now. I just wanted to make that clear. I don't want to mislead anyone.
I'm glad you adapted to that there, BBD.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for clearing it up for the listeners.
Well, the water wasn't that clear, but I do what I can. So.
Thanks for murking it up for the listeners.
Yeah, it was very clear. I didn't see any of it when I watched your stream. And I as well was streaming. Corey was along for the ride as my guest on Wednesday night. And we just got a first access view into Ravnica Allegiance Standard. And I was blown away at just how much game I got to play before a pre-release. Now, think like 3-4 years ago, even last year, the pre-release was the first time we got to touch these cards, but
and then we waited 2 weeks, and then we had to wait 2 weeks till it was on Magic Online, right?
Yeah, and now we're playing Standard 3 days before the first flights for the pre-release. It blows my mind how quick these sets are coming out to us. And now it's, I mean, as we speak, there are players on Arena and Magic Online playing Ravnica Allegiance Limited, and probably even starting on Constructed. It
some of them might
awesome
even be swimming.
Quick. Well, at least one.
Oh, no, I'm not on Arena right now. I'm bucketing out water. So,
Yeah, Brad, didn't you hear him earlier?
Yeah, sorry, I have to keep the continuity. I apologize about that. I'll work on that as the podcast goes. But, yeah, so we all got to play this format. And, Brian, any interesting things happen while you're streaming?
Yeah, actually a number of interesting things happened. So I streamed for almost 12 hours during the day on Wednesday, well, carrying into Thursday, if I'm going to be completely honest. But it was kind of an awesome experience. And normally I would think about 12 hours of streaming and be like, oh no, like how am I going to stream that long? But it was actually a ton of fun. And the time went by really fast because it was just so awesome to play with like all the new cards, and even had like just a really awesome time even in the last 2 hours playing with what was kind of like a meme deck and just destroying people with it. So that was probably the highlight by far.
Yeah, I watched a lot of your streams, and I would say that I didn't really see any decks that weren't meme decked.
Well, it depends on your definition of a meme.
Yeah, so I also streamed upwards of 10 hours throughout the day. For 5 of them, I had Corey along for the ride.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to mirror a lot of what you just said. The day flew by. It was so much fun. A lot of my subscribers sent me deck lists, and we just had a whole lot of fun just exploring this format. Oddly enough, all the decks that had Explore in them did not do that well for me. The Ravnica Allegiance really did bring the fire when it came to new standard potential, and most of the decks that had the newer cards were excelling for me. And to kick things off, the card that impressed me the most was Hero of Precinct 1. I didn't even really... This card went so far under my radar that I didn't even know about it until I saw... what is his name? Yeoman 5's list of a Mardu humans strategy. And I queued it up right away. And within like the first two games, I was hooked. I was just making a bunch of tokens off this card. And I think that this is going to be an all-star in Standard. What do you think, Corey?
No, I think the card's great. I mean, just the fact that we're having so many guilds thrown into Standard here, that there's going to be so many ways you can actually build this card, and they're all going to be effective. You know, I mean, there's not too many like mono white or white, you know, just very monocolored strategies going on here. Everything has multicolored. So I think the versatility of this card is going to be outrageous.
Yeah, it also interacts with so many cards like Judith the Scourge Diva.
I think Heroic Reinforcement was my favorite. You just get an extra token to get in there. That's so insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Heroic Reinforcements in that card is going to just for sure be a defining part of Standard.
Yeah.
I when I saw that card, I thought that both Hero of Precinct 1 and also the enchantment that pumps all your multicolored creatures, or sorry, it's an artifact, the Glorious Anthem that pumps all your multicolored creatures, were just going to both be really phenomenal cards just by the nature of how multicolored sets with multicolored creatures and great mana generally works out. It's going to be easy to play like all these hybrid colored cards and then get a bunch of tokens off them. And then, yeah, Heroic Reinforcements is just absolutely insane when you get to make tokens off of all your precincts that also get pumped, also get haste.
Yep.
It's just kind of a disgusting synergy.
The other thing that I didn't think about when evaluating this card was all of the multicolored one drops that you can play, like Flower Flourish, Integrity Intervention, even a new Footlight Fiend, which is a 1/1 for black or red, and when it dies deals one damage to a target. All these cards just synergize so well with this. You can play a hero on turn 3 and then play one of these one mana spells that turn, either protecting the creature itself or just generating more value on the board. The board clumps up really quickly, and that's something that's Heroic Reinforcements really wants to see, is a go-wide strategy.
Exactly. I think like cards like Fiery Cannonade are going to be like getting so much better soon just to deal with these kind of go-wide strategies, because it seems like there's a lot of them. A lot of these go-wide strategies are seeming to dominate as far as yesterday goes. It is best of one, so being extremely proactive and, you know, stuff like that is going to give you a natural advantage for game ones, but still, we're going to see it so much in Standard moving forward.
That's actually a good point to bring up. The Ravnica Legion's early access event was only best of one sealed and Standard, so that they could keep the 399 plus one flooded players really condensed into two formats, so there weren't a lot of queues waiting to be filled. They also
only
allowed
BBD's
us to direct...
bedroom filled with water.
Yes. They also allowed us to direct challenge each other, and for I would say a couple hours, Brian and I, along with Corey for the ride, were battling each other, just trying all of these different strategies out, and it was a lot of fun. But I do agree that the thing that happens on week one is finding the shells, and the shells often don't have the correct interactions. So we see the powerful single card effects or very linear strategies overperform, and that gets amplified when you're only playing game ones without sideboard cards.
I hate to be that guy, but I'm gonna have to correct you again, Mr. Nelson.
What did I do now?
Well, you said that we battled each other to try strategies out. I actually battled you to demoralize you.
Yeah,
I was demoralized.
And I gotta correct you. I gotta correct you as well, Brad. When you said it was only like 2 hours, it felt like 6 or 7, because BBD kept beating us so many times in a row. It dragged on.
It still hurts. I wish we weren't going to get into this, but now that we're here, you did have a lot of meme strategies that I don't feel should have beaten me, but did. And I'm not really happy about it.
Well, I'm quite pleased about it, in fact, because I also didn't think that they should have beaten you, but I was very happy that they did, because defeating you with the most meme of strategies, and for those who are unclear, when I say meme, I mean like a deck that's not designed to be tier one, but basically designed to do something unique or interesting, or in this case, defeat Bradley J. Nelson.
With one threes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I did hear that that strategy was actually not tier two. It could have been tier one or tier three. Have you figured it out yet?
it's only tier one or tier three. It will never be a tier two
no
strategy.
No middle ground.
And for everyone listening that wasn't watching Brian's stream, you're just going to be left out on the joke. Sorry.
No. Yeah, so I had a lot of fun actually battling each other because some of the decks that I played were, one was an Esper control deck, where a single profane procession was the only way to win a game, with the alternate win condition being casting the sorcery that shuffles your graveyard back into your library so that Brad would naturally mill out before we did.
I don't know. I think your metagaming skills were very good on this because you knew who you were playing against, and you knew if Brad just didn't have creatures in hand or something like that, he was going to scoop them up. So I don't even think you needed either of those win cons, and you still would have won that game.
That is probably true. We did win on like turn 10 from concession. And then I also played the beautiful 1-3 strategy where almost every creature in the deck was a 1-3. Which allows Tetsuku Umezawa to give them unblockability, which when paired with high alert, put me on high alert as maybe even life alert, as my heart was beating too fast to be able to contain my glee. So,
yeah, it was a brutal experience. I'm not going to lie, especially when thinking about how it was just live for viewers to watch.
Is live the word you want to use?
Well, it is live. And I mean, okay, so let's think about this. Let's have a different perspective. If this was a different time, like a Roman time or something, if this was like an arena, a Thunderdome, I would have been the one dead and I wouldn't even be making this podcast. So at least it was magic and I survived it. I lived to fight another day, and we will again battle while streaming, and I will seek revenge and end up on top. So you may have won the battle, but I am going to win the war.
Yeah, the nice thing about me being over there and not actually controlling the mouse, it's like I didn't technically lose. It was more in your hands. I was just the consultant.
Yes.
Yeah, one thing I want to say, though, about the early access event is like how awesome for Magic this is. Like you guys touched on before, normally my first touch of a new format is playing like sealed at a pre-release or drafting online, and we got to play standard before that, and it was everyone was streaming this event, and the number of viewers was like, somebody was telling me it was like more than Hearthstone, more than Overwatch at certain points of the day.
I saw 30k and, at one point. That's just insane.
Yeah, I mean that is awesome. Like that is makes me really excited for the future of Magic to see people getting so hyped about a new set and the ability to play it on a program that's more streamer friendly, like MTG Arena. I don't know. I'm just super stoked about what this could mean, like moving forward for Magic as a whole.
It was so smart of them to do it this way before the pre-release. I mean, it just builds so much hype for the game, so much hype for the new set, so much hype for Arena. It was just everything about it was so smart.
It also allowed me to play Magic earlier, which I did like.
I do know you like to play Magic at any time you can.
Yeah, yes. I don't really like playing Magic, so that part didn't appeal to me, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, you like playing memes, right?
Yeah, I like memes a lot. Whether I'm playing them, making them, or reading them.
Yeah.
You like memes, you don't like playing Magic. I don't even know if you like talking about Magic. You like scooping water with buckets and meme strategies.
That's right. Those are my two favorite. Those are some of my favorite things.
Brad, are you reading his Tinder profile? Or
just so the viewers at home know more about you if they want to go continue, you know, watching your content and things like that. We just need to make sure that they really encapsulate the essence of BBD on the Bash Bros podcast.
They get the groundwork or the waterworks, as BBD would have.
Well, water is the essence of life, so they're really capturing a lot. I'm actually capturing a lot of essence right now. So.
Well, this conversation is fun. I do hope people will come back for more content again when we have a special guest. So we're going to
we're really giving them an inside scoop. So
yes, we are. So a really inside scoop on what to expect moving forward. Let's jump into one of the meme cards that actually did a lot of good work for many streamers. I even dabbled in it. It's Prime Speaker Vanity Fair.
Or Venifer of Vengerberg, depending on your...
Venifer of Vengerberg?
Depending on what you're coming from, yeah.
All right, so for anyone at home that does not know what this card does, it is the Simic Birthing Pod creature. It's a 2/4 for 4, and at sorcery speed, you can tap, sack a creature, go get a creature from your deck that costs one more mana than the one sacked, and put it directly into play. The best version of the deck that I saw was... Teemer, because there's a lot of good red creatures that synergize well with Prime Speaker. Mostly it's Rekindling Phoenix going to get either Scargan Hellkite or Siege Gang Commander. Also, there's a few six drops that are quite powerful in that strategy as well. Plus, Teemer is the kind of strategy that doesn't really want to work with a bunch of removal and card advantage. It kind of just wants to get on the board and get things running. So I liked it in that deck. I played it a little bit. I don't know how good it's going to be, given that it's week one and everyone is probably not playing enough removal on their deck. That's just kind of how things work.
But I think another point about it is we're just scratching the surface of what you can actually search up with it. Like a fine-tuned list that just has all these toolbox cards. Like, I thought Prime Speaker Vanifer was going to be like quite bad just because it could be killed by Lava Coil, could be killed by just about everything. But, I mean, they have to have that answer right away. Otherwise, it just gets so carried away. And if you have the green-red, the enchantment, the Rhythm of the Wilds, like being able to haste that in and sacrifice something is, it was quite dirty.
Yeah, no, Rhythm of the Wilds was actually one of the most impressive cards throughout the day for me. And it was mostly what my opponents were doing to me. So I can see how that card works really well with Prime Speaker Vanifer. Now, I don't think you played any with this, though, Brian, did you?
No, I played against it a number of times, and I kind of agree with the general sense that I thought it was going to be really bad, and it ended up being a little bit more impressive. However, I still didn't think it was like busted good. I just thought it was a solid thing that you can do. Will it survive the format once people, like you're saying, start playing more sweepers or removal spells? Maybe not. But I also agree that Teemer was the most impressive shell to me. Rhythm of the Wild was insane with a lot of the cards in that deck. Rekindling Phoenix is a very good combination. So is Siege Gang Commander. I actually lost to Itali Primal Storm out of the deck.
Ooh.
And that card with haste off of Rhythm of the Wilds is a very dirty combination.
And honestly, me and Brad, we played some games where we went Rhythm of the Wild into like Crackling Drake or something and had that attack with haste, which was something that definitely had the power level to be real. And, you know, throwing these drakes with haste is just absolutely busted. Backing up with Dive Down, yes, please.
Oh, don't you worry. We will talk about that. That is my favorite deck that I played throughout the day, but we're going to get through a little bit more of these Teemer cards as we talk about Growth Chamber Guardian. I don't really know what to think about this card. It was going in a lot of strategies. It has a lot of combos with either Rhythm of the Wilds or Hadana's Climb, other token generations. But for the most part, it kind of just felt like inadequate bodies that just built up on the board. Did anyone have good experiences with this card?
Yeah, I think it was just a little too cute.
I thought it was actually one of the best cards that I played with.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And also, I found it to be the most annoying card to play against when I was playing a control strategy. Mm-hmm. And also, when I was playing this card against control decks, I actually won one game where I kept missing land drops and didn't really have a chance to play cards in my hand. And I just beat my opponent with... Well, basically a single Growth Chamber Guardian that was able to keep finding more and more and more. And as my opponent like countered my spells, tore apart my hand, they just died to the Growth Chamber Guardians I was searching up. I had great experience with it. I played it with Rhythm of the Wilds. I also played it with Hadana's Climb. And I thought it was pretty powerful. And also even just later in the game, there were times where I would draw it when I had an incubation druid that had already adapted and just had tons of mana, and all of a sudden it's 3/4/4s, which is pretty strong.
And I mean, we saw a card like this in the past that, you know, had some standard relevance, and that was Squadron Hawks, you know? I mean, it was a small body, but searching the thing up just adds for a little bit of you know, a little bit of different ways that you can attack your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if we're comparing it to Squadron Hawk, we then have to, like, talk about how we had Jace the Mind Sculptor to shuffle them back in, and also swords to equip to them. But I do agree that the size is good. I think the card's decent. It might take over the Explore package with Wild Growth Walker in a lot of strategies. That felt more mid-rangey, and I don't know if that's going to come back in any capacity in Standard. It's a good mana sink, and Standard does like mana sinks. I just don't know how impactful these bodies are going to be against other strategies, but against control, I agree that Growth Chamber plus Rhythm seems like almost all you have to really do to dwindle away their resources and make all your other cards just finish them off.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I thought the card is going to be really strong just because of the way games go. Like, it's not a card that's going to be, like, insane against some of these aggressive decks, but sometimes games stall out, and sometimes the aggressive decks still win because they just draw better than you, like, as the game goes late. Like, things like, there are just a lot of games like that that play out in Standard, and just having more abilities to use with your creatures is just something to not be, like, ignored. And also, I mean, it also works really well with Domri, too, is another card that Growth Chamber Guardian worked well with. While I wasn't that impressed with Domri, I thought that that specific interaction was pretty good, where with five lands in play, you go Domri plus, make a 3-3, and find another one out of your deck.
And I think it's nice, like, against certain decks that are really heavy removal-based. Like, you don't want to actually play your very strong creatures, but you play this that searches you up more cards, and, you know, they have to waste removal on that, or choose to just get hit a few times, you know?
Yeah, it can't be ignored by a deck that is trying to win via removal and card advantage, because that's playing the same game for free.
Yep.
So I do like that aspect of it. Another 2-drop from Ravnica Allegiance that's green with Adept is Incubation Druid. I didn't know what to think about this card, but when paired with effects that can easily put +1/+1 counters on creatures, it got out of hand quickly.
For real.
And I mean, like, during BBD's savage dismantling of my psyche, he once did that in a Selesnya strategy by just using, what is that, Assembly?
The 1/1 counter and Indestructible, right? The split card?
Yeah, it's Assemble or Assure Assemble is the card.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you assured my defeat when you put a counter on an Incubation Druid and just had, like, access to, like, 7 mana to my 3.
Yeah, it was.
It did happen. Yeah, it did. That did happen, and it was a delight. Let's not kid ourselves. So weirdly enough, I didn't find Incubation Druid to be as good as everyone else did, and I played a ton of it. Almost all the decks that I played over the course of the day were variations on Temur or Simic, and I saw a ton of people raving about it being the best card in the set. All this other stuff. I mean, I thought it was a good card. I thought it was certainly a card that would almost always make a green deck. And it's just a good enabler for cards like Rhythm of the Wild, Domri, Hedonna's Climb. Can give you a ton of mana early. But at the end of the day, you know, if you're not combining it with the correct synergies, it is a 0/2 for 2. The mana, you know, we've seen cards like Druid of the Cowl that exist in Standard that don't see any play. A lot of the time, the card's not better than Druid of the Cowl, and so I'm hesitant to say that it's as insane as everyone else is, but it is still very good.
Yeah, and I mean, like, for instance, another 2-mana accelerant that I thought was miles better was, like, Growth Spiral. I thought that card was just absolutely phenomenal every time I saw it. Ramping and drawing was just so good.
I'm really conflicted on Growth Spiral personally, because on one hand, it's enabling Turbo Fog, which is just the most visceral, infuriating deck that has come out in years. Now, people don't like losing to Burn, or they don't like getting Tron, or Kayside, or Stormed. All of that stuff doesn't really bother me. I don't really jump into that hate hype. But 2 days ago when we were playing in the Early Access event, and my opponents showed up with Wilderness Reclamation, Growth Spiral, Turbo Fog strategies in a streamer event where everyone is performing to an audience and playing Magic, I got so mad. I just snap conceded against all of them and just waved my finger, shame on you. And I really do think that Growth Spiral is just a perfect addition to that strategy, as it's just this ramp. Like, I played against someone that I will not name because I don't even want to plug them because they were playing the strategy.
Well, don't be so mean to BBD, dude.
Yeah, look, I'm in the stream.
He's currently
I'm in
this
your podcast. You don't have to, you know, hold back.
All right. Well, it wasn't you, but I was playing this match, and they played turn two Growth Spiral into Gift of Paradise, Search for Scanta, Teferi Time Walk, and I was like, or Wilderness or something. They just time walked immediately, and I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I didn't think this deck was actually going to be this real.
Would you say it was a walk down memory lane?
I mean, yeah, it was Groundhog's Day. Every turn just kept playing out the same. I wasn't even developed yet.
That doesn't seem like the thing you want to be doing on your first fun stream day. You want to be playing 1/3s and 1/3s only.
Yeah, yeah, come on.
Exactly.
If there's no 1/3s in the deck, count me out. I actually have a different opinion on this. I think that people want to see that deck. There's a lot of people who want to see how good Wilderness Reclamation is. And so I have no qualms with somebody piloting Turbo Fog. And there's no, like, restrictions on what decks you are or are not allowed to play. I don't think there's anything wrong with showing up with Turbo Fog. I know that I personally played against it once, but I was on blue-white control, so...
You destroyed
easy
them.
Easy game.
Well, I hate the strategy. I hate it so much, and maybe I shouldn't be this subjective, and I should be non-biased about things now that I have this platform, but I'm going to use my platform for things that I really care about, and this deck sucks. I hate it.
Yeah,
I hate everything it stands for.
I mean, I agree. I think the deck does suck. I think it is a bad thing for Magic to have a deck like that exist. I completely agree. The thing is I don't even think the people who are playing the deck will disagree with that. I know plenty of people who say, yeah, I play the deck, but I don't think it's a good thing for Magic. Like, you know, I'm just playing it because I think it's my best choice.
Yeah.
And I can never fault somebody for playing what they believe to be their, like, the best choice for them to win. Even if it's a miserable strategy.
Yeah, and let's get real. The problem isn't in the new cards. It's just Nexus of Fate. You know, I mean, we've had that problem before. It just has so many new toys right now, so it's going to be a lot scarier.
Yeah, I mean, there's some problems. Like, that card might have been designed poorly to Teferi the same. We don't really have to get into that. And
no,
I do agree.
Let's get
with
into
everything.
It. Actually, let's make the rest of this podcast explicitly about Nexus of Fate and Teferi, and let's release it 7 months ago.
Yeah.
That's a smart idea. Maybe we'll try to. I have been watching a lot of Future Man, so time travel has been on the top of my mind. So, but I want to talk about Growth Spiral because I was doing some cool stuff with this card, and I really do like this card a lot. It's even just a splash into an Izzet's Drake's deck. That's it. It's just the deck that I am going to, after this podcast, I am running over to Magic Arena and I'm playing an Izzet's Drake deck that splashes Growth Spiral with some green cards on the sideboard, because I just think that this effect in a blue based, like, hold up spells strategy is phenomenal.
Yeah, when we went Growth Spiral into Crackling Drake on turn 3, it just felt so filthy. Like, we played like 3-4 spells in our first 3 turns, and we ended the turn at like 6 cards. I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah, I mean, mana generation is very powerful, but it's not something that blue decks normally get access to, and especially blue decks that are also wanting to play spells and draw cards and things of that nature, where Explore was Sorcerer Speed, so sometimes you know, you'd have to, like, decide if you want to hold up an interactive spell or play a ramp spell, but now you can do both. If you don't need to use that mana during their turn, you can just cast a Growth Spiral and develop your mana a little bit more and have way more high impact turns. And that's really good in a deck that's trying to always have an extra mana to dive down either one of the 8 Drakes or a Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah.
Skidding to seven mana isn't the easiest thing to do.
And this card does have problems. I mean, you know, it isn't a ramp spell to its core. Like, you still have to have, you know, four lands in your hand by turn two. So the times, it's not a full-on ramp spell. So it gets a little tricky sometimes, and you sometimes it's a little awkward in your hand. So it's not, you know, perfect or anything, but it has some power.
Yeah, I want to say that I was personally not impressed with this card, but I was also playing it in a ramp strategy. And I think there's a huge difference between the kinds of decks that can play this card and the kinds of decks that can't. So the ramp strategy that I'm playing relied a lot on creature mana, or also Gift of Growth. Or not, that's Gift of Paradise, sorry. Mm-hmm. And those cards are not lands. And so Growth Spiral's not always going to give you an extra land to play. And sometimes the ramp that it provides is not really any better than just casting an Incubation Druid or casting a Gift of Paradise. So I think it's really important to note that it does seem to go best into the decks that, like what Brad was saying, where you're playing 26 lands in your deck already. You want to make sure you always have lands to put into play with it, and also that you're playing a deck that can benefit from the extra mana in ways that you don't also get from other cards. So I didn't find it to be that impressive for that reason, but at the same time, I think I was playing it in the wrong kinds of decks.
Yeah, I think it fits best when you like have great four drops, you know, like when you ramp into a four drop, not where you're trying to ramp into these seven or eight drops or trying to ramp into Hydrid, Krasis or something like that.
I mean, I think it's a great card that Drakes might be able to use, because that's the kind of deck that also cantrips a lot and also like generates card advantage in a lot of unique ways, holds up mana, does a lot of tricky things. Getting access to additional mana. Yeah, you get the spell count up, but also like when you played on turn two, the deck has upwards of 8 to 10 spells that they can play with one mana between mm-hmm. shocks, ops, spell pierces. Once you get to 4 mana on curve, you're playing cantrips, you're going through your deck and things of that nature. I think that it's just really good with decks that can utilize its mana that doesn't need to worry about, you know, what BBD was playing. Like, you don't want to ramp into a mana creature. You don't actually want to, when you play decks that have a lot of mana acceleration via like creatures, drawing cards doesn't really work in strategies like that well. It's not, you know, you don't want to go elf into Tidings. You want to go elf into some big monster like a Scargan Hellkite or something.
Yeah, or Nissa or something like that. Something that has staying power on the board.
Yeah, or Vivian, you know, for instance.
Oh, sorry,
for those
Vivian,
who don't
that's
know,
what I meant. Yep.
Yeah, who don't know who Nissa is. Nissa hasn't been around for a while, but there are many 5-mana Nissas that have been all great. All right, so let's talk about another 5-mana card that you also wrecked me with. Man, I lost a lot to you, BBD.
Yeah, you really did, and I'm kind of all about it.
Yeah, it's we all have our roles to play, and I've accepted my fate. You beat me in all of the non-important matches. I beat you in the important matches. And yes, I'm ready for my dig that you beat me at the Worlds you won.
I wasn't going to go there, but now that you said it, I did in fact beat you there.
All right, so let's talk about Nikya.
Nikya.
Yeah, so I played a lot. I mean, I played 12 hours and I only played Standard the entire time. So I had three decks that I thought were the most impressive decks. One of them we kind of touched on, which is Hero of Precinct 1 in a Mardu aggro strategy. I thought that was the single best deck that I played, and the one I would just play this weekend if I were playing in a tournament. But the deck that really surprised me and also impressed me was a Temur strategy that was almost entirely creatures. Other than Domri, every card in the deck was a creature. And this deck was based around the card Nikya of the Old Ways, which is a 5-mana Gruul creature, 3 green-red. It's a 5/5. You can't cast non-creature spells, but it doubles your mana effectively. Anytime you tap a land for mana, you get double your mana out of it. And I was extraordinarily impressed at the things that you could do when you had a Nikya in play, such as casting Hydroid Krasis's for absurd amounts, playing, adapting, and searching up all of your Growth Chamber Guardians, going bananas with Scargan Hellkite's ability, and so on and so forth, to the point where I actually stopped playing this deck on my stream because I was winning too easily with it.
wow.
And I was like, well, we should just play other decks. I'm just winning every match with this deck, and it seems too easy. So That's how impressed I was with this deck. Even though it doesn't have much interaction, but you're getting all your interaction from creatures, and you're doing extremely powerful things, and casting a 10-10 Trample Flyer that draws you 5 cards and gains you 5 life, that's not bad.
Not bad at all. And like the thing I love about Nikia is, you know, paired with creatures that actually do stuff that spells would do anyways, like, you know, the Krasist and the Hellkite, like being able to kill stuff and draw cards, why do you need to play non-creatures, you know? I also think this card is going to be a limited bomb. Like, even if you have plenty of, like, red removal or something like that, you can dump your hand on turn 6, play a bunch of creatures, and eventually they're going to have to kill it because it's a 5-5. The stats on it are already insane. So it's going to destroy Standard and be an absolute bomb in Limited.
I don't know how much it's going to destroy Standard, because one of the cards that I think that was not seen enough play, and, oh, I'm going to sound like a close friend of ours, BBD, Shaheen Sarani.
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah. Is Mortify was just not seeing a lot of play because it's kind of difficult to find the best mixture of mid-range or control strategies that dabble in these types of effects right away. But Mortify just feels like the card that should be getting played right now. It deals with Rhythm of the Wilds. It can kill these bigger creatures like Nikia or Scargan Hellkite. It deals with Wilderness Reclamation out of like a, or Search for a Skanta. Like, Search for Skanta used to be the premium card. I remember, like, a year ago playing Control Mirrors, and if you got Search down game one, it was almost effectively over. The game was almost done. Now, with that card, access to Mortify, it's not even that big of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't think Search has really been an issue for a while now, thanks to cards like Niv-Mizzet or other ways to win games, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Treasure Map has really taken over.
Yeah, with that being said... I agree that Mortify looked phenomenal from all the matches I played. I mean, there was Hedonis Climb, Rhythm of the Wild, Wilderness Reclamation, plus just normal enchantment-based removal. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ixalan's Binding still a card, Conclave Tribunal still a card.
Ooh, you're forgetting the biggest one, High Alert.
High Alert is also a card. Let's not mince words on that. Blowing up their High Alert to turn... Devoted Chaplain from a 3-3 back into a 1-3, that is big game.
Oh, very big
and
game.
I think Mortify is just a great card that you can have in a control shell, but it's also great in like a mid-range deck. So I think you know, it's just going to be able to fill so many holes just being a premium removal spell in this format.
Oh yeah, I want to play some Obzon like really badly.
Even Mardu, it seems great in. Get some aggressive creatures down. Get a war boss down and then just slay away, you know, their powerful spells. It seems great.
Yeah. On the topic of that, I want to say that I was extremely unimpressed with every mid-range deck, especially the Explore package throughout the entire day.
Get out.
I do think that's going to be...
Okay, I'll see y'all later.
Swim away. I do think that is a little bit based on the best of one, the stream event best of one thing. You know, mid-range has always been better because they have great sideboards. And this best of one is definitely going to favor these hyper-aggressive linear strategies along with the hyper-controlling strategies that are just going to kill all these creatures with, like, Kaya's Wrath and stuff like that.
It could also be the fact that these cards are really good and a lot of them just got introduced into Standard.
That could be, too.
Yeah. So I'm usually kind of a curmudgeon when it comes to new sets. I don't really get hyped about cards that much. I don't really get excited about it. And I'm not really like, oh, this card's going to define Standard. I kind of come into new sets with an expectation that the set's not going to be that impactful, generally speaking. With that being said, I did actually find that there were a lot of very powerful cards in the set. And I do think that this set is going to have a massive impact on Standard. And I hope that I don't eat my words on that. But I do think that more so than most sets, this set is going to change a lot about Standard. And that I can get behind that.
Yeah, I thought these cards just look so, so fun to play. And they're so fresh. Like, I just cannot wait to play some Standard.
One of the cards that was most fresh and most busted for me was Kaya. I played against Kaya once and played with it twice, and all three games it was cast, it did win the game. And now, you were saying a lot of negative things about Kaya, BBD. So can you fill us in why all of these games were won when Kaya got cast? We're not going to go into the effect that Kaya had on the game.
He was showing Kaya Wrath.
I want to I'm going to share something here. It's personal and it's embarrassing. I myself was tricked into casting the card Kaya. And not only did Kaya show up in my hand every game that I played with this deck, I also won every game where I cast the Kaya, and it was also because of the Kaya. So I'm a little embarrassed to state that it actually was way better than I thought it would be. And maybe that's because I only played against Rakdos, and they had a bunch of 1-1s that I was exiling with it. But maybe it's also playable. I don't know.
A gasp.
Yeah, it also beat me once because it single-handedly kept a Search for Ascanta from flipping, which was like my only source of card advantage in that particular game. But I mean, it still was not that impressive a card. But I did see it win a lot. There was even a great match that I watched some clips of from like the Computer King playing against Day 9 that just like played a mill and exile strategy and just like 40 Day 9.
Nice.
Yeah, just annihilated him with Kaya, and that was a really good clip online. It was hilarious because it had both sides of the interaction, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
I'm not gonna lie, I destroyed one of the best Magic players of all time, Gabriel Nassif, with Kaya.
Oh really?
I was exiling his one drops and then exiling his graveyard and gaining 2 life against his Rakdos deck.
Wow,
it does seem good against hyper aggressive black red decks. I mean, it's I hate to say it, but it actually seems quite good.
All right. Actually, I might be mixing games. I know I exiled. I know I played it against Nassif and I was beating him with it, but I don't know if all of that happened in one game. I played it a lot and it won a lot of games, but I do know that I did beat Nassif with it. Not sure exactly how, but it happened because the Planeswalker has 0 abilities, but somehow it still worked out. So
did you do any busted stuff with Dovin Grand Arbiter? Me and Brad did some busted stuff in that Jeskai like kind of tokens list we played. We're just like down ticking Dovin and then up ticking a Johnny and just making 2/2 flyers. It was kind of busted.
Yeah, I actually played a lot with Dovin in that 1/3 deck, and it was surprisingly pretty decent. At the same time, it didn't seem like overpowered.
Yep.
So
agreed. It seemed like we used the negative ability a lot more than the plus one.
Right.
Well, let's just be honest right now. Last standard format, Vivian Reed just took over, and it made for really, like, I enjoyed playing Golgari. I felt like Golgari was very similar to how other people might view Turbo Fog, where I played Golgari, I won a lot with it. I thought it was the best deck, but I wasn't like excited about the strategy. I just truly believed it was the best strategy to play. And most of that was because Vivian Reed was busted. When the deck came out, when the format came out, the Golgari decks had both types of Vraskas and like maybe 1 or 2 Vivian Reeds. And by the end of it, the Planeswalker suite main deck was just 3 Vivian Reeds. That's it across the board. And now when Dahmer came out, I was like, oh, another busted green Planeswalker. But it wasn't that impressive for me. And maybe it will be soon. But I didn't think it was that good, and I was kind of relieved because of that, because I'm very sick of Planeswalkers just dominating standard.
Yeah, well, I think one reason that Vivian was so good is, like, the downtick ability was destroying deck's removal, you know? Like, when you get to take out Conclave, Tribunal, and get back your Wild Growth Walker, it's just so good, but with the rise of, like, Mortify and stuff, we're not going to see as much enchantment-based removal like Ixalan's Binding and Conclave Tribunal. I just think those cards are going to be worse. So I do think, in turn, that's going to make Vivian Reed worse. I could definitely be eating my words, you know, on this subject, but...
Well, I'm going to make you eat your words right now, because the least valuable ability was killing enchantments, even though it was effective.
Yeah.
And it did that a lot. I mean, the biggest thing was that, like, a card like Niv-Mizzet was never a threat because I had so much removal in my deck. If I slammed a Vivian Reed, I was able to draw a bunch of cards before they killed it, and that generated more advantages. And Teferi, like, the last format, it was, like, hyper-aggressive strategies, and then decks that either played Teferi or Vivian or were just wrong to play. And yes, Brian, I do believe that your Izzet Drake deck you played at the SCG Invitational was wrong to play.
I didn't play Izzet Drakes at the Invitational. I played Teferi.
Oh, yeah, you did switch to Jeskai.
Take that.
So, you were just working on Izzet Drakes for a long time.
Your own words there, buddy.
Yeah, me and BBD were crushing it with Jeskai Treasure back then. Sailor of Means, all the goodies.
Sailor of Memes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean,
I'll never get away from the memes, sorry.
To be fair, I have some Sailor memes in my Simic, or excuse me, my Teemer Drake's deck right now as well.
Ooh, spice.
But
I'm in.
But yes. Yeah, so I definitely like the fact that the Planeswalkers are just kind of weaker. They're not they're good for three mana. They have an effect on the game that's interesting, but they don't take over a game if they live. And Dovin definitely won't do that. It'll eventually do that if it gets out of hand and you start getting a bunch of creatures and finding three cards from the top 10 cards of your library and ultimating and things like that. That's true. Kai can win the game. Domri can win the game. But they don't feel like if your opponent untaps with it, they just win that turn.
Yeah, agreed. They're more accessory Planeswalkers. Like, I think the craziest thing that we did was just Dovin, downtick, and then our next turn, downtick again to get two tokens, and then heroic reinforcements, and you just bash in, mm-hmm. you know. But I really think they need other stuff to be good. To be good.
Yeah, I want to say that I think this is, like what you guys are saying, this is how Planeswalkers are supposed to be designed. They're supposed to have niche roles, and they're supposed to fill those roles. And then they're not supposed to be busted. Like, they're supposed to only be able to be played in certain decks, be good in those decks, but then not be something that takes over the format. And we've seen,
Brian,
we've seen
you forgot one before. Very important thing. You forgot one very important thing that Planeswalkers are supposed to be able to do.
Is it kill a creature, draw a card, and then have an ultimate that wins the game?
Close. You had me at kill a creature, specifically a ghost console creature.
Oh.
Oh, well, unfortunately, Kaya, the Planeswalker, is incapable of killing Ghost Council of Orzhova, so I don't know where you're getting this information from, but I want nothing to do with your sources.
Well, then what's the Wrath all about? Kaya's has a Wrath, I thought, that was killing your favorite card of all time.
Oh, well, that's interesting, too, because the thing about Kaya's Wrath is that it can't kill a Ghost Council of Orzhova because they've blinked it out, so it wouldn't be in play to get Wrathed. So, once again, this sounds like fake news to me, but, you know, I'm not going to malign your sources unjustly, but, yeah, I don't know where this is coming from.
Yeah, I don't want to get caught. I'm going to just back out for now and just go recheck my sources. We'll come back to that one. All right, so one thing that we really need to touch on, we've talked a lot about Standard, and we all have things that we're going to work on, and things are going to evolve, right? Like, this is Standard. It evolves a lot. There's nothing set in stone yet. We just have to continue exploring and finding things. There's obviously powerful cards that people want to work on. Like, I know BBD is going to keep trying to do awesome things with Hydroid Crassus. I'm going to work on Drake strategies that are trying to ramp, as well as Judith is something that I want to work on a ton.
Yeah, that's what I want. And Judith, Spawn of Mayhem decks, just aggressive black-red decks. That's my right up my alleyway.
Yeah, I think Judith might be the best card in this. Yeah. Well, Hero Precinct 1 might be better, but Judith and Hero Precinct 1 are amongst the best cards in the set,
you don't,
for sure.
You don't think Spawn of Mayhem's up there? That card did some ridiculous things.
I wasn't that impressed by it, honestly.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It seemed powerful, but not, like...
Just the fact that it triggers Spectacle, I think, is just so powerful.
Yeah, but Judith just allows for every creature to just go into the red zone and not really get punished. That was, like, the most disgusting part about that card. Yeah.
And your opponent just can never block correctly. You know, I mean, they have to make sure every block is within, like, 2 damage points so they can't be pinged after they die. Like, it makes blocking insanely difficult.
Yeah, for anyone who's ever played it with or against the card Goblin Sharpshooter, it kind of feels like the same hopeless effect where you know that no matter what happens in combat, you're probably losing everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Or even damage on the stack Mog Fanatic interactions back in the day. Like, that was always so confusing to...
Whoa. Damage on the stack? We're in a new arena, world.
I have an idea. Let's talk about mana burn and damage on the stack. Then let's release this podcast 10 years ago.
I am in. But can we make a quick pit stop 9 months ago?
No, I don't think we
7
can.
Months ago?
We don't have time.
We can't make
that.
A quick pit stop? Okay. All right.
Are we there yet?
Yeah. So there is one thing that we definitely have to talk about. At least this is, I don't know if this is on BBD's level, but for the Bash Bros podcast, one of the themes that I'm going to make happen is talking about the animations, because I love seeing the cards that I played for almost half my life come to life on the screen. And each, like, when we played this event on Wednesday, it was the first time we got to see them, and I was blown away by a few of them. So I want to talk about the best animations, and I'll start with my favorite, which is Seraph of the Scales. Now, it's very specific why. So as for anyone that hasn't seen it yet, when the creature comes down, it's an angel that has a, what is it, a tipping scale?
Yeah, like a balancing scale, I think.
Yeah, a balancing scale.
A balancing scale, yeah, a balancing scale. And it's holding that in the art. So when the creature enters the play, there's like a cloud, a dark cloud on the top of the screen, and then lowers the balancing scale. And then it goes back up. And I'm like, that was cool. It's not what I thought, because every angel kind of just animates out of the card and flies away. And I'm like, well, it's good to like change it up, right? But then I activated one of the abilities, and the scales came down. And if I activate Death Touch, a black feather drops on one of the scales and tips it. And if you drop, if you give it vigilance, a white feather drops on the other scale and tips it. And so it's one of, it's a recurring animation that you can control by activating this card.
Yeah, I think which, I will have to say that you actually tipped the scales more than you played lands throughout your day.
So,
oh yeah.
So wait, hold on. Would you say that this card scales with the amount of mana that you have in play then?
Oh, it definitely does. Also, one thing that I'll never do to an opponent is rope them. Is that the terminology?
Where you make them wait long enough where that rope comes up. Yeah, that's roping.
Yeah, yeah. Roping, it's a really annoying thing that I know a lot of people deal with, because my username is FF Freak. I don't think anyone's is roping me, because I haven't experienced this, but a lot of people have said, and it's a really bad thing to do. If you do that, please stop. Just stop. Instead, scale them. Just activate Seraph of the Scales as many times as you can before they kill you. Okay, because the animation is both sides. The opponent sees it, and it happens every time you activate the card. And I do believe that'll get patched to only once per turn because of me.
So if you can take, I go on record and say that I would rather be roped than scaled?
Yeah, I want to say, if you want to take anything from this podcast, it's that Brad thinks you should troll your opponent 100% of the time.
Yeah, the only takeaway here is that you should be horrible to your opponent on MTG Arena. That's the message of the podcast.
Well,
sure.
I think roping is a horrible thing, because but like activating Seraph of the Scales is hilarious.
It's the same thing though.
No, you get to see a cool animation.
I don't know. Ropes are cool to some people.
Yeah, I love the ropes.
I'm a
I think
big
ropes,
fan of
roping
that blue
is
color.
A great animation.
It's beautiful.
All right, well, we'll see what people think after this goes out. But I am a huge fan of this card. I think that was my favorite animation. Anyone else have some cool ones?
Oh, yeah, I got a favorite. I think it is so cool when you, like, deal damage to someone and you have, you know, if you have, what's the card? Spawn of Mayhem or anything with Speculate, right?
Spectacle.
If you have anything with Spectacle, like a black chain comes down from their life that like you're grabbing them in and be like, oh yeah, I've dealt damage to you. I'll be doing some more damage to you soon. And then you get to play with the abilities. I thought that the chain was cool. Or how the cards like start on fire in your hand if you dealt damage to them.
See, I wasn't a big fan of this because I'm not really into the whole repetitive animations.
Oh, yeah.
Only
scales. I can see that.
Only scales.
Yeah, not really into the repetitive animations. Every time that
you don't like when things scale to ridiculous, unfun levels.
Exactly.
Like
Turbo
Fog or animations that you can do repeatedly to troll your opponent.
I think the one thing that was probably really good from BBD's experience is every time you would put something with Adapt in, all this water would be coming around, and he'd be confused if it's the water from the cards or from his bedrooms.
You know, the thing is, you're absolutely correct. That was a confusing experience for me, but the joy was that it didn't matter. I was happy either way. I want to say, actually, since I'm the special guest, I'm gonna be extremely rude. I'm gonna overstay my welcome. I have two things that I want to say.
Oh, all right. Come on.
I thought Ravager Worm was by far the best animation, not close. Oh. Because Ravager Worm, when you kill a creature, it jumps up from the ground and consumes the card and then goes back into the ground and the card is no longer there. And I thought that was so awesome.
That was pretty cool.
And the other one I'm going to say is the Simic sound effect was utterly disgusting, and I loved it.
It was like you pushed in on like putty you would get as a kid, and it just makes that squishy sound. It was really weird.
Yeah, sounded like my feet when I put them on the ground and I hit into the puddle of water from my room flooding over. It was really a similar sound, and that's why I liked it so much.
Well, good for you for pushing through and still streaming under these tough situations.
Yeah, I mean, you got to fulfill that contract.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, it's also like biogenic ooze when I saw it for the first time. It's just like an ooze trickling down and sloppily falling all over the battlefield. I'm like, oh, Simic is just gross, like nasty. Like, get your stuff together. Clean up.
How would you feel if just a big, nasty ooze flopped down on your battlefield, Brad?
That's too good. But I want to go back to Ravager Worm, because there was another card that did a similar one like that. It was the Tyrant Dinosaur, the white mythic from Ravels of Ixalan.
Trapjaw Tyrant.
It did that as well. Every time you did that, it would come up and eat the creature in play. And that was really cool, because that was very flavorful for the art, just like Ravager Worm. But the animation was not as big, and it wasn't as clean. It would, like, you would still see, like, some of the pixelated card, and then it would just disappear. Ravager Worm just literally just ripped it to shreds. It just annihilated it, and we killed a Baneslayer Angel, a Lyra, and it disappeared. And I was blown away the first time I saw it.
So I'll be the devil's advocate here. What do you guys think? Do you guys think there is a point of too much animation where this would maybe start to annoy people that just want to play Magic? Or do you just love all of it all the time?
I think there's a balance to be found. And I think some of the animations are tipping the scales a little too much on one side.
Like what card?
None in mind, really. Nothing comes to mind. I'm just saying that in general, something might.
But I mean, these new cards are definitely way more animation before. I mean, like, we had like Carnage Tyrant, Niv-Mizzet, where they'd come out of the card, you know, yell at you a little bit. But like these are lasting animations that are going to happen a lot. Like, what if it's something, you know, a creature where whenever you tap it, it adds a mana out of the card, and you're seeing that every single turn. Is that get annoying at some point? Or,
well, they're not gonna do that. Also, the animations are happening when you can also interact with the board without them. So like, you're casting a card that creates an animation, but then you have priority again to do your other stuff, or True. You're passing while it's going. Like, there are so many times that I've seen the Carnage Tyrant come up, scream at the board, and then my opponent starts their turn, and they might even start casting something while the animation's still finishing.
Yeah,
it's not delaying the game. Now, you could say, like, maybe there should be an option to just not have them for like boring people.
Yeah.
But you know, you don't want too many animations, and maybe they'll go a little bit too over the line, and then we'll say, hey, this is kind of, you know, this isn't going well for surveys, and they might tip it back. But they definitely want to find that line, because yeah. I personally have had a lot of fun with it, and I don't like the repeating ones like Spectacle, because it happens a lot and it does like take up a lot of the screen. Yeah. I feel like the cards could just start a blaze instead of the big chain coming down. But I want them to play with this, because it, you know, some you might not like, but others you want them to experiment with them, because you want the Ravager Worm to just come out of the ground and just consume a card whole. It looks so cool.
Yeah, and I think you personally did a lot of help troubleshooting when it comes to that, because people are going to be like, yeah, everything was awesome except Brad tipping the scales repeatedly.
Well, yeah. Spamming good game.
I want to go on record and say that I think the animations are phenomenal, and I think even people who don't think that they care about that aspect of Magic care more than they believe subconsciously.
Yeah.
It's just something that makes it more fun to play. Yeah. And whether or not, like, I am a very competitive person, and I care about winning, and I care about card text more than art and stuff like that. But that doesn't mean that the art doesn't still make me excited. Yeah. And I think it's just generally awesome. And I want to see them, like you were saying, test the limits of what is acceptable or not. Now, with that being said, I also felt that Seraph of the Scales and Spectacle were a little beyond what I was, like, happy with.
Yeah, and I will say that I was strictly playing Devil's Advocate. I love it. I think it is so good. I think it just adds so much fun to the game. You get hyped when you drop your bomb, because it's literally bombing them, you know?
So, wait, would you say that you are excited about dropping bombs?
I'm excited to drop some bombs, absolutely. Interesting.
I would not have expected that.
Me? Really?
Well, I think that's gonna do it for our first show. BBD, thank you so much for being a part of this.
I know you're
a very busy man dealing with a lot of underwater trouble, so thanks for taking some time out of your busy flooded day
to swim up into our world.
Yeah, yes. No problem. It's like the underwater level in Mario. No one wants to be a part of it, but once you're done, you're happy about it.
That was good. That was really good.
That was good.
That's why we wanted you to be here first.
Yeah.
So can anyone find you anywhere if they're looking for any more BBD content?
You can find them under the sea.
Under the sea.
Yeah, you can find me at the bottom of your nearest lake if you throw 5 coins in there and mutter the chant. But you can also find me on Twitter at BrownDoinIt. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/mtgbbd.
Now, why didn't you pick BBDMTG?
Because I made my account a long time ago, and I could never figure out how to change it, so I never did.
That's a great answer. That's a better answer than I thought.
Yep, that is tough.
Well, it's the honest truth.
All right, well, bro, take us away. I hope you had a wonderful first time. I can't wait to be doing this every week with you. This is just great.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brad. And BBD, a huge thanks for being on our inaugural episode. This was awesome. And of course, you can find myself at Corey Ballmeister on Twitter. You can find Brad at FFFreakMTG. And you can find the podcast at Bash Bros Podcast. I want to thank you so much, and we will see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.